Doctors love to use humor.
Well, Mr. Foster, your blood tests are back, and the good news is you're not pregnant. I said not pregnant. Is this thing on? But unfortunately, the CAT scans are just a laceration in your spleen, which is why I asked for a surgical consult.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean, I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
I think I'm just a little on edge.
Look, I apologize, too. I behaved very unprofessionally.
It's just that I'm really frustrated because I can't seem to kick this habit.
Well, listen, may I suggest something that seems to have worked for many of my patients?
Changing doctors?
I'm a qualified doctor. I don't want to learn any trade.
Can I help you?
Yeah, Dr. Cosmo Kramer. Proctology.
Before you even consider this, I insist you consult a doctor.
What's up, Doc?
Doctor, can't you see I'm burning? Oh, doctor.
311 on 580 CFRA. Anna Drahovzl filling in for Rob Snow for the afternoon edition from 3 until 7 o'clock today. And Dr. Barry Dworkin joins me in studio for Wednesday House Call. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Are you still enjoying that intro?
It's great.
It's got you going.
It's good.
Dr. Barry Dworkin taking your calls at 521-8255 star 580 or 1-800-580-CFRA. Any questions you have for Dr. Dworkin, he'll be taking them up until 4 o'clock today. Some news in the health world that we could discuss, Dr. Dworkin. One of them, a little bit lighter, the Got Milk campaign. You might see these ads coming out. These are the people who made the Got Milk promotion campaign. They're out with a new strategy that it's causing some controversy because it sort of pins the PMS problem that women or PMS symptoms, I guess, that women have and puts them on men. So you have a lot of men in this ad looking confused and hurt and saying, you know, got milk as in a way to help women deal with their PMS symptoms. And the people who are behind the ad campaign say that if it's encouraging women to drink more milk to fend off PMS because some research suggests that increasing the intake of calcium and vitamin D helps alleviate the symptoms of premenstrual syndrome. Does it?
I've yet to see any evidence to suggest that. And it's supposed to be a humorous campaign, but really from the patients that I'm treating who have this condition, it's really hell for a lot of women. They dread the fact that their periods are coming. It's not even called PMS anymore, which is premenstrual syndrome. It's called premenstrual dysmorphic disorder because it really does mimic and, in fact, is really a chemically induced depression. It's what we call an endogenous depression. These unfortunate women have literally a week, sometimes 2 weeks of all the symptoms you'd experience with depression, the mood swings, irritability, can't sleep, just not happy at all. And it does affect families in a very negative way. They feel tremendously guilty over that. And they don't have very much control over that as well because it's not an external factor. Their lives can be going along just fine from a relationship standpoint, work environment, friendships. Things can be fine. And yet, for 1 to 2 weeks out of the month, and every month, which amounts to 6 months a year, they feel absolutely miserable. And the other 2 weeks where they're feeling well are basically, oh my, I've got to gear up for the 2 weeks that I'm going to be feeling terrible. So it doesn't leave their lives. So this campaign really, if we were to say, drink milk to get rid of your depression, it wouldn't be too funny. Mm-hmm. And so this sort of campaign is lacking the understanding that this is a situation where you have people who are experiencing depression. And it's not something to really be made light of because it is you just wouldn't do that with any other disease. So that's the issue with this. And then to claim that this will help depression, which is, again, this is what this condition is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And so it really, they're playing with fire, these guys, to do something like that. As much as they're trying to make light of it, it's in reality, when you're talking to women and their partners, it's very stressful for them. It's not something that they make light of. They want to feel better. And this is not something that's going to make them feel better.
So, I mean, a lot of these women we're talking about, they're obviously seeking some kind of drugs or prescriptions to help them through this, and a glass of milk is not going to make the
difference.
That's right.
The treatments for some are usually antidepressant medications, which help tremendously for some, stop them from having that every month. I mean, the whole idea is you have to always gauge treatments with their effectiveness, the side effects that they may have, and also the end point being the quality of life. And if your quality of life improves with that particular treatment and you're not experiencing untoward side effects or they're manageable, that's what you have to look at. And so in this case, you know, you look at it, you know, you from a superficial standpoint, you read this and you go, yeah, this would be a good Seinfeld type of joke. But at the same time, it's really not a joke for many people. And I think it's going to irritate many people to see this kind of advertising.
521-8255 *580 or 1-800-580-CFRA to get your question to Dr. Barry Dworkin. Julie, you have a question.
Oh, hey there, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
Okay, so I work with teenagers out in the West End, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are drinking the monster drinks and
yes.
the energy drinks, and I'll see them come in to our facility with two or three of these things. So I'm just wondering if you have some magic bullet for me to say to the kids, gee, do you know what you're doing when you're drinking these things? Because I know they're absolutely terrible for them.
Yeah, well, they're considering not only the calorie content, but the caffeine content in these. This is, for some of these drinks, depending on the size that they're buying, they can be the equivalent of drinking 4 to 5 or even 10 cups of coffee.
Because, yeah, and these are the big guys.
Yeah. So the problem is warning teens that doing something is not healthy for them is not going to change their behavior.
For sure.
That's the issue. Now, what I would then say is the issue with teens is they are striving to become independent. And with any type of addiction or any type of dependency, the issue then becomes, how much is this interfering with your ability to be independent? So the challenge would be, can you function without these drinks? And if you can't, then these companies that are selling you these drinks are controlling you. And so that is one of the strategies that can be used in terms of appealing to their sense of independence. Whether it works or not is another issue. But the point is saying this is bad for your health, they're not going to listen to that. You can say it and just put it out there on the record saying, you know, these things are not healthy for you. They can increase your heart rate. They speed you up. They can create anxiety if you take too much of it. It can cause agitation, lack of focus and concentration after a while. The withdrawal effects of these medications, do you get irritable when you need, and then you need to drink another one? All those are symptoms of dependency on a drug, in this case, it's caffeine. That's the angle I would at least try first to say, what happens when you stop drinking it? Can you function? If you can't function, you are now not independent. You are dependent on something in order to function. And that might be helpful. At least it's worth a try.
It's definitely worth a try.
Thank you for the call, Julie. We're going to go to Ted. How are you, Ted?
No, I'm not bad.
Good. What's your question for Dr. Dworkin?
Oh, doctor, I have what you call restless legs.
Yes.
And I'm taking a pill called Tevapramexol.
Yes.
And she started out giving me one pill at bedtime.
Okay.
It did nothing.
Right.
And she put me 3 to 4 pills at bedtime. And if I don't take them 3 hours before bedtime, mm-hmm. it might go nuts.
Right.
Is there anything else that might work?
There are a few other medications to treat restless leg syndrome. But what you're taking does tend to help. You have to be careful with the dosing. You always have to start with a low dose. Usually they start with 0.125 milligrams.
That's what it is,
yeah.
0.25.
And then they go up slowly. And for some people, it works marvelously. For others, doesn't work too well. And too much of a dose can actually cause, and we're talking about doses that are about 10 to 15 times that 0.125.
Okay.
For some people, they end up with impulsive behavior. Some people end up going gambling, and it induces almost like...
Oh, I did that before I took the pill.
Right. So there has to be that warning that it can cause some certain compulsive behavior changes if taken at too great a dose. But at the dose you're mentioning, not a huge issue. There are other medications. Restless leg syndrome can also be treated with the same medication, albeit in lower doses, that we use to treat Parkinson's disease. something called Cinemet.
Well, that's right. Was told this was for similar.
Yeah, it's similar. It was a more refined medication. But if this is not helping you, or you're finding the side effects are really not your cup of tea, that would be another option to try. Is the Cinemet? Usually, it's just one tablet. It's a 100-milligram tablet, and that does help some people. I have patients on both of these medications. In terms of some, it works for some using the Cinemet. For others, it works using the medication you're using. And so it really is a matter of trial and error, using medications that are indicated for it, but really seeing what dose works best, and also measuring side effects. And again, if the side effects are really not what you're willing to tolerate, then I probably would ask your physician to try the other one.
And it's called Cinemet?
Cinemet.
Okay, I'll mention it to her.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you, Doug. And the number to call is 521-8255, *580 or 1-800-580-CFRA. We'll take a call from Doug. How are you, Doug? Welcome to the show.
Not too bad. Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
I'm experiencing some severe leg cramps in my left leg. I was working on my car on Saturday afternoon, up under the dashboard. My left leg was completely bent under me, resting on the driveway. My right foot was on the driveway, and I was reaching up and under, you know, just basically contorting myself to work under the dashboard for between 1 and 2 hours. And I was in that position for an extended period of time, and it was hot, and it was humid. The rest of the day I was fine, but I noticed on Sunday I started cramping up and having a problem straightening up. By Monday morning, I could basically not walk.
Yep.
And I couldn't lie flat. Now, I've been able to get to the point where last night I was able to lie flat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm into the burning phase now, but I'm still not walking very well. My wife is having to get everything for me.
Yeah.
What exactly happens to the muscle in that case, and how long is this going to go on for, and should I start maybe slow exercise on the exercycle?
What's happened is likely from the position you were in, which actually sounds like you were practicing for Cirque du Soleil or something like that, is you likely tore, you overextended it, tore the muscle. Being in that position for so long a time, the muscle's continually staying in one, you're essentially pulling it in one direction and not giving it a break. If you were in that position for an hour or two in such a cramped quarters, so the muscle can tear. When it tears, usually, because it was hot and humid, muscles tend to stretch. But then once you're out of that position and the muscles get a chance to cool down, they will contract. And that's where the cramping comes from. And so it does take, what you're describing is the natural history of damage to muscle tissue, in that you will have inflammation that follows afterwards. You can get swelling that occurs. The cramping that occurs from that also is very normal. And over 3 to 5 days, that tends to settle down. You still have stiffness because the muscle is damaged, but ideally you want to use the leg by either just gently walking or trying to keep it loose as much as possible, but certainly not putting it in any position or demand that you originally did. So you don't want to do any work where you're, bending down, trying to generate a lot of force in your leg. Right. But this will heal up. I mean, it's not something that's going to last for too long, but you're still looking at several weeks probably of muscle aches until that leg works itself out. But, doesn't sound like you're a spring chicken anymore, just like me. So this is the kind of thing that happens. Our muscles are not 25 years old anymore. They just don't heal as quickly.
Right. I'm in the burning phase now.
Yeah. And it is. You can use pain relievers. You can use anti-inflammatories, acetaminophen, ibuprofen, those kind of medications. If it provides some relief, great. Heating pad, heat on the muscle will keep it loose, especially at night.
Gentle heat.
Yeah, you don't want anything too hot. But other than that, it is just a function of time, and it's a traumatic injury to the muscle. It's been torn, and it's just letting you know that it wasn't too happy.
Thank you for the call, Doug. It's 324 on 580 CFRE. Dr. Barry Dworkin will take your calls up until 4 o'clock at 521-8255, *580, 1-800-580-CFRA. Reporting on 580 CFRA. Welcome back to Wednesday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. He's taking your calls up until 4 o'clock at 521-8255, *580 and 1-800-580-CFRA. We'll go right to the phones. First to Nick, who's been waiting patiently. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Oh, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
As I explained to your your one on the phone. I have diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed that it was just the worst damn toothache I ever had in my life.
Right.
And I went to the dentist, and he brought out a flyer that he had received somewhere or other as a dentist, and he said, there's nothing wrong. They took x-rays of my teeth and everything, and the teeth, what mm-hmm. I have, looked good.
Right.
Went to the doctor, and she agreed that it was probably trigeminal neuralgia and prescribed Lyrica.
Okay.
That's what I'm taking now.
Right.
But it works to a point.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff comes and goes. It started about a year ago last January, lasted about a month, maybe 6 weeks, and it completely disappeared until this past January, and it came back. But this time it didn't disappear. It's still very much a nuisance.
Which part of the face is affected?
Left-hand side of the face, gum, and the left side of my tongue. That's why I thought it was a tooth. I thought it was an abscess tooth or something.
Okay, so you said it's affecting the tongue as well.
Yeah, the tongue and my left-hand side, the bottom jaw.
Okay, because the jaw would make sense. The tongue, from my understanding of the anatomy, it's usually not going to affect. There's other nerves that run to the tongue, which is, so that's a bit strange. The fifth, the trigeminal nerve or the fifth cranial nerve, has nerves that exit through the above the eye, below the eye, and also on the jaw, and usually gives sensation to the face. It's a sensory nerve to the face. There may be a branch that runs into the mouth. I'd have to check the anatomy again.
Because it's triggered by temperature change.
Yeah.
Just licking my lips sometimes.
Because
it'll trigger it.
Because usually for trigeminal neuralgia, you really have a painful face. The face really hurts, and the treatment is usually not Lyrica in this case. It's usually carbamazepine, which is a different medication that's used it's sort of the first line treatment for trigeminal neuralgia. It's usually given at a dose of 200 milligrams twice a day. Usually you start off at a lower dose, and it's taken every day to try to minimize the pain. And so the Lyrica itself, if it's helping a bit, that's great, but that wouldn't be the first choice to use to treat a diagnosis of trigeminal neuralgia. And for our listeners, trigeminal neuralgia, again, it's the fifth cranial nerve. It's a nerve that starts off deep inside the brain, and it splits into three branches, which is why it's called trigeminal. There's three branches to it. And the most common cause for trigeminal neuralgia, about 80 to 90% of the time, it's a small artery, what we call an aberrant artery in the brain, that actually pushes on the nerve, putting pressure on it, just like when you lean against your elbow and your hand falls asleep, or you're sitting for too long and your leg goes to sleep. It's a similar thing that happens in the brain, where the artery pushes on this nerve, but instead of you feeling numbness, it generates pain. And there are several treatments for that, but usually it's medical treatments first, such as the carbamazepine, which would be the first line.
Exactly what my doctor told me.
Yeah.
Most of the word.
So what I would suggest is, if the Lyrica is not working, you may want to switch to carbamazepine, which is the indicated medication. Lyrica is not indicated for trigeminal neuralgia. It's indicated for postherpetic neuralgia, which is after shingles infections. It's also indicated for what we call neuropathic pain. But trigeminal neuralgia is a separate entity in and of itself. And so if indeed that's the diagnosis, then perhaps a switch to a medication that may give you a bit better relief would be in order.
Thank you for the call, Nick. We're going to move right along so we can get to all of your phone calls. So we'll head over to Michael next. Welcome, Michael.
Yes, well, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
I'm conscious. About a year and a half ago, I woke up one morning after a nice sleep, and my left knee was hurting. And it's not like it's, oh, my God, my knee's going to fall off. It's more just like, oh, that's a really annoying pain. And it goes away if I bring my knee in, like, bringing it in and out,
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, 3-5 times,
right?
It'll pop, and then it'll feel fine. But the thing is, I do that about, it comes, I have to do that about 10 times a day.
Okay. Is it painful at all?
It will be. If it just sits there and it starts out as that annoying pain,
mm-hmm.
it will progress to, okay, this is starting to actually hurt now.
Okay. And does this happen primarily if you've been sitting for too long, or if the leg has been sort of immobile for a bit of time?
Not necessarily. It has happened sometimes when I'm just walking. I'll start to feel them.
Okay.
But it is more often when I am sitting down. It happens when I'm sitting down, like for short periods of time, or if I've been active and then I sit down, it'll start to hurt.
And you said it almost pops when you try to straighten it out.
Oh, it does pop. It does. I'll bring it in and out like 3-4 times. I can feel it building up, and then, then it pops, and it feels like it's like cracking your knuckles. It just feels fantastic afterwards.
Well, from what you're describing, I would probably have that knee looked at just to see if there's any structures within the joint itself that have either been stretched or torn. Mm-hmm. Does it lock on you? Like when you're sitting, for example, and if you were to try to straighten your knee out, is it stiff? Do you have to sort of force it to straighten out first?
No, it'll go out without any problem.
It will. Okay.
Now, this is more just me concerned. Like, by ignoring it or just dealing with it as it is, is it going to get worse in the long term?
And the way to answer that would be to do the appropriate, first of all, the examination of the knee to look for any lax ligaments to make sure that there's no damage to the cruciate ligaments or even the ligaments that run on the side. Also to assess the joint to look for swelling. And it may require also an x-ray of the knee to look for any arthritic change. It can also be meniscal damage. Sometimes that will do that. But popping in the knee, especially that frequently during the day, not usually a normal thing to have happen. So
no,
there may be
some,
and it is causing some functional compromise, right? You're not able to use it as well because it is a bit painful. So something is up. It could have been from some trauma, unknown if that's the case. But nevertheless, the way to really know, so that, you know, if they do all the evaluation, they say, really, you know, there's not much damage in there. It's popping, but there's nothing that's causing any overt damage. At least you know, and then you're not going to do any more harm to it.
So the best thing to do then is to schedule an appointment to specifically to have my knee looked at.
That's what I would do.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. And the number to call if you have a question for Dr. Barry Dworkin is 521-8255, *580, or 1-800-580-CFRA. Gina has been waiting patiently. Welcome to the show, Gina.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate very much your opinion concerning my situation.
Okay.
I woke up Friday morning with complete exhaustion, and I took my blood pressure. It was a little high. But my pulse was only 45. So all day through Friday, I just was lying down and trying to do a little bit and then lying down again. And Saturday morning, my blood pressure was a little more normal and my pulse was around normal also.
Okay.
But I still was very, very tired. So I went to, since I had a mini stroke a few years ago, I was worried about my heart. I went to the clinic. And they checked me over, put me under observation a few hours, and they said, there's nothing wrong. It's probably a virus. So I thought I would be better in a few days, but it's now the sixth day. I am a little bit better, but I'm still not my normal self. I have to lie down half an hour to work maybe an hour and then lie down again.
So this happened suddenly because prior to that Friday, you were feeling fine.
Yes.
Okay, and then the next day the exhaustion happened. Has been any medications that have been changed? Anything that you're taking right now?
I'm taking bisoprolol for my anarrhythmia.
Yeah.
I'm taking 5 milligram, and they told me at the clinic to reduce it a little bit, to cut it in two and take 3/4.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing now. Probably this will help the rhythm to don't go too low.
That's exactly right. Bisoprolol is a beta blocker that can actually slow your heart rate down, can also cause fatigue. But again, if you were on that medication for a while, the question I would ask is why all of a sudden would you have that exhaustion if you've been on that medication for more than, you know, it could be months that you've been on it. And that it's not reasonable to assume it's the medication that's doing that unless there has been some change in how your body is either metabolizing it or there was something that was consumed that may have interfered with the metabolism of the medication, which can make it worse. But ultimately, if you're feeling that tired and it happens suddenly, I would then say I would start from scratch and do a workup for the exhaustion. So checking your thyroid function, making sure there's been no blood loss, checking hemoglobin, iron levels, vitamin B12 levels. Those are some of the initial things that I would do. Check your blood sugar. These are the things that you would do just to make sure that you're not missing the boat on anything and making assumptions that, oh, it might have been the bisoprolol. Because a sudden change like that, with everything being equal, since before Friday you were feeling okay and now you're feeling tired and it was sudden, means something happened acutely to do that. And it really warrants a start from the beginning workup for the exhaustion, because you can't make an assumption that it was medication that did that. You have to do the appropriate thing.
We have time for one more call, and so we're going to take that from Michael. We're just going to squeeze you in. So really quick, Michael, go ahead.
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so mine is a bit similar to the caller, I guess, a couple ago. I injured myself playing basketball. It's my shoulder. I was sort of squatted down trying to grab a ball on the ground. I'm quite outstretched, and somebody grabbed it and lifted it up.
Ow.
Really, you know, pulled my shoulder, not out of place, but
yep,
very painful. I've been getting physiotherapy on it now for a month and a half, and it is definitely slowly getting better, but it's, you know, it seems like a long time. The physiotherapist thinks that it's probably just some pulled ligaments in the shoulder and nothing more than that, and it's slowly recovering. You know, is it worth going in and trying to get x-rays or...
The best thing to do for a shoulder, especially if it's still giving you limitations and the type of injury that you had certainly could have caused some tearing of muscle or tendons, which could be a rotator cuff tear, is doing an ultrasound of the shoulder. It's been already 6 weeks. You have had some improvement, but that's still, you don't have a diagnosis yet. You've had an assumption that there's some muscle damage, but ultimately, given that you're active, you want to know whether you have a rotator cuff tear, because for certain tears, depending on the degree of tear, they can be repaired, surgically repaired. For others, it's not necessary to do that. But in order to know what direction to go in, the ultrasound is non-invasive. It's very quick to do. It's quite accurate at determining whether there's a tear. And at least with that, you know if more is needed than just the physiotherapy.
All right. Thank you, Michael, for the call. Thank you for all of your calls on Wednesday House Call. Dr. Barry Dworkin is back every Sunday at 4 o'clock for Sunday House Call and 6:50 in the morning for Health Headlines with Maidley in the morning. So thank you so much, Doctor.
My pleasure.